Get on Team Shaq with WynnBET. We're playing parlays, boosting odds, and laying the wildest prop bets. Don't miss another game. Download the WynnBET sports betting app today.
Sign up today and win $200 in free bets when you place a $10 first-time wager on a straight bet or parlay. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
Hey Marlins fans, before we get started, just want to talk to you for a second about BetDSI, our presenting sponsor here on Swings and Misses of the Five Reasons Sports Network. All of the games this weekend in the NFL, in the playoffs, are right here on BetDSI. That's the Chiefs hosting the Colts, the Rams hosting the Cowboys, the Patriots hosting the Los Angeles Chargers, and the Saints hosting the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles. That's right, the Saints hosting the Eagles. The Saints are an 8-point favorite against the Eagles, and I know the Saints have been great, but that feels like a lot. That said, Drew Brees at home, it's tough to bet against him. The interesting game to me is the Patriots and the Chargers. The Patriots are a 4-point favorite, but man, has anybody been playing better football than the Los Angeles Chargers? Phillip Rivers and company have looked great. So make sure that you go on to BetDSI.com, use our promo code SWINGS101, that's SWINGS101, to double your initial deposit up to $2,500. That's SWINGS101 on BetDSI. And now, swings and misses. And thanks again for tuning in to a special episode of Swings and Misses, you Marlins fans, as we are without the Mishes part of Swings and Mishes. No Craig Mish today, but I'm joined. Oh, by the way, if you don't already know this, which you probably should if you've been listening to this podcast, but hey, maybe there's some new ones. I'm Jeremy Taché. I'm your producer and today co-host of Swings and Mishes. And I'm joined by our very special sub-in guest, our substitute guest, and that is Michael Sunbake. So Dutch Bake on Twitter. How you doing, bud?
Good. How are you? I'm the third man of the year.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of six man of the year, he's got provided some valuable minutes off the bench for us. So Dutch is always joining us. And for those of you who don't, I'll put the plug here at the beginning of the pod. Follow Dutch on Twitter at Dutch B-E-E-K, but that's Dutch Bake, because he is just full of hot takes, just so many of them. They're constant. And it always I enjoy his takes, and what I enjoy even more are some of the people within our own network here at Five Reasons responding to his takes and all of the conversation that ensues. So that's a blast. As you guys could tell, we don't have a lot to talk about today based off that minute and a half introduction, but we do really want to update you the best we can in terms of the JT Realmuto sweepstakes or lack thereof at the moment, and where things sort of stand and what Dutch and I sort of think is going to unfold and what really should unfold from a Marlins perspective going forward. Also, we'll have Marlins arbitration coming up tomorrow and a couple other things we want to get to. But first, again, we're starting with JT. If you guys listened last week, Craig gave you a full in-depth review of what's gotten us to where we are now in terms of JT and the Marlins and where JT might be traded. So if you haven't listened to that episode and you're listening to this right now, I would suggest that you go back and listen to what Craig shared with us last week. It was really providing a great perspective on how we've gotten to where we are right now and the teams that have been involved, some of the names that have been involved. For those of you that did not listen or did listen and just want a quick refresher course on the percentages, you can find these on Craig Mish's Twitter, at Craig Mish. But for purposes of this podcast, I am going to restate them, and that is at the moment, the leader in the clubhouse, we have the Atlanta Braves. They're at 35% chance to land JT. Then the Tampa Bay Rays at 20%. Then both the Astros and the Reds at 15%. And then the field at another 15%. Notice the Marlins are not on there. So we are still pretty sure that JT will not be a Miami Marlin come the 2019 season. And so Dutch, you know, it's been a while since we've had you on here, and I'm just intrigued to know, what do you think about where everything's at right now? And if you're the Marlins, how are you approaching the rest of this discussion in terms of trading JT?
Well, one thing I'm surprised, actually, is with Kike's percentages is the Marlins not being listed. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I don't know, just my opinion, it feels like that I would say there's a greater chance that he at least reports to spring training with the Marlins.
Okay.
Like, I don't know, like, we're what, a month away from spring training? Pitchers and catchers reporting about a month. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He seems like it's going to trend towards – I mean, obviously I'm not discounting Craig in any
– Right. No, I understand. This is just from trying to think of it from a perspective of, well, if they don't get it done soon, what has to happen?
Yeah. And I think in a way they've kind of messed this up. I think they're trying to right their wrongs of trades of past. Mm-hmm. With holding on, trying to get, you know, apparently they've asked for Bellinger, they've asked for Albies, you know. So I think they're trying to right their wrongs with trades of past. They feel like they screwed up, which I honestly don't think it was that bad.
I don't think any of them have been that bad, to be honest.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think they've messed this up a little bit by holding on too long. I don't think they're going to get the value as they once were. As they once thought, like a couple months ago. So okay. Yeah, that's where I am with this.
Yeah, I think I can understand where you're thinking, and I think your thought process is similar to many Miami Marlins fans, especially that are thinking at this point. All right, well, if we haven't moved them yet, then maybe, just maybe, there's a slim chance of hope that he does end up with the Marlins. That said, I find it really hard to imagine that. After all of this trade talk, after everyone knows JT no longer wants to be in Miami, after it's been made, without saying it, it's pretty much been said by the Marlins that they're looking to trade JT. With all of the smoke around it, it's hard for me to imagine there's not fire before spring training. That you end up going into spring training with that being your only story, when the story really should be, and not that it's, you know, not that this is a great one, but the story should be the rebranding, the excitement around that, the build, the theoretically prospects coming into spring training, guys like Victor Mesa showing up, Brinson showing up for a second year, maybe Monte Harrison reporting to spring training. You want more talk around all of the good, positive things that are coming from this build rather than the last domino that has to fall before the build is sort of truly started, right? Or you could say started, you could say complete. Either which way, you're in a space where I don't think you want that happening. And so I believe that I'm still the feeling, and of course this is in large part because I've been having so many conversations with Craig through this whole process, that the Braves have been on this from the start. And, you know, something we were talking about a little bit before we started taping was Yasmani Grandal signing. So Yasmani Grandal now signs with the Brewers. And that's kind of the domino that I think needed to drop that actually helps the Marlins. Where some people might feel like maybe it hurts them because they don't have a solid major leaguer to sign as his replacement. And now maybe they might be more inclined to try to keep JT. I think it does the opposite because teams like the Braves that are just in okay catching situations. You know, maybe teams like the Astros, obviously the Reds and the Rays are in different spaces than the Braves and the Astros. But heck, for that matter, the Dodgers. You know, there are teams that could use JT, and now that there are no legitimate great starting catchers, you know, Yasmani Grandal is a plus starting catcher in this league. Now that there are no other ones really out there for the taking, it might convince a team to give up a little bit more than they were prepared to, say, a week ago. And that's sort of where I imagine things might be at the moment. But it is interesting that nothing has gone down yet, you know, as we approach arbitration tomorrow.
Well, I think maybe these teams are a little bit hesitant, because if you look at the two teams that seem to be the favorites are the Braves and the Dodgers. And if the Marlins really want to get that established young MLB player, I think that's where a lot of the holdup is also coming from.
Right.
because those two teams, Braves more, are young teams. You know, they're trying to add Realmuto, who's still what, like 27?
Yeah, he's in his like middle late 20s. Not like late 20s, but mid to late 20s. You know what I mean?
Like 27. They're trying to add him to that young major league team.
Right.
I mean, the Dodgers are a little bit older, but I don't think they want to subtract one of their core young players just to add another one. So that's I think that's where a lot of the holdup is coming from, which I think a better route for the Marlins might be just to do like a 2-for-1, 1-for-1 with a team's top prospect.
Yeah. I think what's tough is the Marlins are in a very precarious situation because so much of this does come down to PR also, right? Like so much of it, because of the backlash of last year's trades, whether it's rightful or not, we've talked about before on this podcast how you can't truly judge any of those trades until these guys have seen a couple of years in the big leagues. But after the backlash of trading away an MVP and what JT's potential is, I think the Marlins are being very careful about what they take in return. And if it's just one major prospect, can they afford for that person to then flame out? And so it's really hard to make a swap, even if it is by the math of it, right? Whereby just looking at your farm system, you're hitting reset, you're taking a player that's hitting his prime now, that you're not going to be good while he's at his best, and you're saying, well, let's just take a younger version of that, whether it's a catcher or some other position, right? If it's an outfielder, if it's an infielder, if it's pitcher. Taking a top prospect, that's great. But to not have anything to back it up and have the entire trade rely on one player who might be an injury away even just from a fluke thing happens, it's got to be really tough to pull the trigger, even if it's a top prospect. So I can imagine, you're right, it's that type of situation where you say, you know, 1-for-1 might make sense for a top prospect in an organization, just take it and run with it. At the same time, it's tough because you need the backup to the collateral. And so that's where these trades can become so difficult. And I know in future episodes, Craig and I are going to try to get into some of what really goes down in making a trade. But it's going to be a tough situation to be Mike Hill in this front office trying to make sure that you're getting the best for what is a highly, highly valuable commodity. Whether it's a highly sought-after commodity at the moment, no one is truly sure. None of us know until the trade is made how sought after that commodity might have been. But it's a valuable one, to say the least, because, you know, and we can transition to this now. Through arbitration, if there is no extension reached with the Marlins, no multi-year extension and then a trade, JT right now is projected to make a little over $6 million next year. For what JT Realmuto can bring to a ball club offensively and defensively, that's such a bargain. And to put that on a team that might already have a relatively high payroll or wants to spend elsewhere to make their team better, that's a really valuable piece. And so it's a really tough spot. But, as we've said, continue to watch the Braves and see what they're willing to do on this. And obviously, you know, there has been some smoke around Tampa Bay and Cincinnati, you know, that came up later in this process. And I think the more that comes up later in the process as teams are still out there, I know, you know, we have 5 or 6 teams out there, you know, from all sorts of different reports, but the more that comes up and the more names you see, as Craig mentioned last week, those are the types of teams to keep an eye on. But we'll transition over to arbitration, since really how much more can we talk about JT Realmuto? When it comes to arbitration, JT's out there, but there are 4 other players out there for the Marlins that are facing the arbitration deadline tomorrow. That's Adam Conley, Miguel Rojas, Dan Straley, and Jose Ureña. And I guess the question that I have for you, Dutch, is if you were the Marlins, it's not necessarily asking will any of these guys sign extensions before the arbitration deadline, but more if you were in their position as the Marlins front office, how would you be approaching those 4 players when it comes to trying to possibly reach a number for a singular year or a possible long-term extension? Are there any players on that list worth it?
Besides Realmuto, obviously. Right. No, I don't think any of those guys are worth a long-term extension. Maybe Ureña, but he's too he's too up and down to bet on long term. All these guys, I would say you go year to year with, because honestly, going into 2020, going into like halfway of 2019, do you expect Conley and especially Straley to be on the Marlins next year or halfway through this season? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see them as being in their plans. So the only name that intrigues me for an extension on that list is Urania, because I still think he has high upside,
right?
Especially as a low end rotation guy, or I think personally he can be a pretty elite bullpen pitcher. Mm. So he would be someone that I would maybe consider swinging a 2 to 3 year deal with, but
right.
Not Conley, Rojas, or Straley.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Rojas obviously is not a productive enough everyday starter to extend for any sort of legitimate number. I love watching him play, but I think there's there's a lot of Miguel Rojas's in the league. I don't disagree with you on the concept of any of those other pitchers kind of being trade pieces, right? So Urania does have that upside and that clear, possibility of being a really good pitcher. Because in the second half of the year last year, or really, I guess, after the whole Acuna incident, he was pretty lights out.
Was it 2017? He was good in the first half too.
Right. And so he's a guy with a lot of ability, but to sign someone like that long-term is something that it's questionable. It's taken quite a gamble that I don't think the Marlins are necessarily in position to take. And when it comes to Straley and Conley, I definitely agree with you that there's very much a chance that Straley could be an arm they move at the deadline. We all kind of thought that might happen this year. And if Straley had been a little healthier earlier on, maybe he might have been moved. Conley's an interesting one, because, and I don't think that they will or should sign Conley to an extension. And the likelihood is that if they use Conley in sort of the closer role or a late reliever role, they may very well do that and ship him out. I have two things to say about that. First, I think Adam Conley still has the potential to be a great reliever. I think that his stuff is there. And if he could just repeat his mechanics and get to a point where he's consistent, he really has that, it's easy to go Andrew Miller, but I won't go Andrew Miller, but he has that ability to be a really elite left-handed reliever. The other side of that is that even if he is, the Marlins should definitely try to be shopping him at the deadline, because
I was going to say that gives you even more incentive to move
right.
him.
To me,
if he turns out to be that,
right?
I mean, I have the philosophy of you never hold on to relievers.
I do too. Yeah, we've had that conversation. I think that was the first thing we talked about on this show ever, the two of us.
Yeah.
That was my second point, actually, was that why would you keep a reliever? When you're not going to be competitive, you should not be holding on to relievers. And if you want to expand on that, you can. But it's, to me, that would be illogical. So I agree with you that I don't think the Marlins should necessarily extend any of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, just to touch on the reliever thing, I mean, I think the best way to speed up your rebuild is if you have a good relief pitcher, trade him at the deadline. That's why I was so upset last season when they didn't do it.
Right.
That's all I got to say about that.
You and I don't always agree on everything in terms of philosophy. That is one thing that we are exactly in the same mindset about. And when it came to the deadline last year, I remember both of us sort of commiserating over the fact that there were no relievers traded. Now it worked out, I guess, with Victor Mesa, that Bear Claw became part of that salary, but all right, so moving on, real quick, and we're just going to touch on a couple of quick things and then wrap things up, because this is not a week to extend this podcast too long, but a couple of quick just MLB notes real quick. First, a little trivia, courtesy of our guys from Fish Stripes. So Jed Lowrie just signed moments before we started recording this podcast.
Okay.
For 2 years, $20 million.
Okay.
That's $20 million spent on a position player, on a hitter, by the Mets. Who was the last player that the Marlins signed for $20+ million that was a position player in free agency? I'll give you a few seconds here to think about it.
Okay. Like $20 million combined. Like
20, yeah, exactly. Because it's 2 years, $20 million for Jed Lowry.
Position player.
Three.
It has to be Jose Reyes, right?
Jared Saltalamacchia.
Oh, that's right.
And I just wanted to see Saltalamacchia on this podcast. I just wanted to say
Saltalamacchia.
And thank you, Fish Stripes.
Well, he got 3 years, didn't he? He got three years?
I believe so. I didn't cross-reference. I just believe our guys over at Fish Stripes that he got $20-plus million. Anywho, going to the real conversation we had. So JT, I think, has held up some of what is ultimately going to go down in free agency. I think this move has kept some teams on the line longer than they intended to, whether that be someone like the Dodgers, maybe the Phillies, the Yankees were theoretically involved early on with JT. And I think that in turn might be part of the reason why Bryce Harper and Manny Machado have yet to be signed. That said, over the last few years, free agency has been kind of strange in Major League Baseball, where guys are getting, you know, 1 year deals that you expect to get multi-year deals, where guys are getting way less money that you expect to get a lot more money, and they're betting on themselves. And now you have two franchise cornerstones in Bryce Harper and Manny Machado that are just out there and have remained out there, and through the winter meetings are out there. And, you know, there's some smoke around the Phillies and the White Sox and the Yankees, but nobody's been signed. And I just want your thoughts basically on, why do you think that is? Why are Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, you know, is there risk to signing these guys, I guess, is more the question? Like, are teams apprehensive to sign these two players?
I mean, I think that's their reasoning behind it, that there's a lot of risk to give out a 10-year deal. But, and I think they, like, look at some of the 10-year deals that went bad. But Harper and Machado is 25 and 26, I believe.
Right. They're young so guys.
That's to me, owners trying to get their fans to buy in, which a lot of fans surprisingly do. You know, they'll agree with, yeah, it's a risk to sign these guys for 10 years.
How weird is that?
I always think that's strange
when fans sign with owners.
Yeah, you should never sign with owners. But whatever. It's especially about money. That's a conversation for a different podcast. But I think a lot has to do with the 10-year deals that were given out to older players like Albert Pujols or,
right,
you know, someone like that. But no, these guys, these Harper and Machado, they're going to give you at least 8 years of prime numbers.
Right.
Which will totally justify getting paid $30 million a year. Mm-hmm. So this is like, it goes back, I think we talked about this here for the Stanton.
Yep.
Stanton contract.
We absolutely.
Where people say, oh, you know, 13 years, you lock yourself in. But you're getting like 10 years of Hall of Fame caliber talent.
Right.
So you're it's a trade-off of trading 10. You get 10 years for maybe paying for three down years.
Right.
Like, it's simple. It's simple math. You take 10 because 10 is better than 3. Like, you take 10 years of good baseball in exchange for 3 years of bad.
Yeah, I don't really understand the concern around these two guys. Look, I get Bryce Harper, like, he legitimately has holes in his swing, right? He does. Yeah. There are times where he slumps. And Manny Machado, people consider to be a hothead or, you know, whatever. I don't buy it at all. I love the way Manny Machado plays. He plays hard. And if he's on the Yankees, he'll be the ultimate villain. And I'll love every second of it because he plays the game hard. Like, I understand that, yes, sometimes he doesn't run out of fly ball. It's a different game. And the game's evolved. Look, I was the ultimate, like, everybody hustle out every base hit. Charlie Hustle. You know, that's who I was as a player. That's because I was a 5'8" Jewish kid in high school. Like, I had no choice but to hustle. If not, I would have been terrible. Manny Machado is more talented in his left pinky finger than most players in the major leagues have in their whole body, let alone you, the common fan. So it's like, I find it so hard to do that judgment of like, ah, he's a lazy baseball player. Like, get out of here with that. He doesn't hustle. It doesn't make any sense. And he plays with such passion and such flair that, like, sure, he stepped on a guy. Like, that was dirty, right? Like, you know, but to me, like, those are the risks that you're concerned about. Bryce Harper, when he gets hot, is the one of the best hitters I've ever seen. And Manny Machado is a cornerstone gold glove shortstop that can hit 300 with 30 bombs. I don't understand how there's any hesitation and how these teams have been holding out in any way other than possibly waiting to find out if they're trading for JT and then what their number can be from there if they try to extend them. And in that case, I can understand certain teams waiting. But other than that, to me, there's no real reason to wait on trying to sign Manny Machado or Bryce Harper. And I don't really get it.
Yeah, I think it's just owners and front office trying to just control the market. Mm-hmm. They don't want the players controlling the market. Because, I mean
that's how it's worked out in the NBA, except they have a salary cap. If look at the NBA. Mm-hmm. If the NBA didn't have a salary cap, you'd have players making in the, like, $80 million. They control.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They control the market. Like, per year, I'm saying. Not $80 million overall. $80 million per year. LeBron James in an open market.
Oh, yeah.
$100 million.
I was going to say, LeBron James makes like $15 or $20 million. It's ridiculous.
It'd be ridiculous
compared to like, his value. Like,
right. Well, obviously, you're a franchise.
It's a good amount of money. But, I mean, like, it's ridiculous for LeBron James. Like, you can compare him to – if he would have played baseball, mm-hmm. you would have to, like – if there was someone as dominant as LeBron James, which I guess Mike Trout is kind of
– it's different.
But not as – yeah, it's different. If there was someone like LeBron James in baseball, you would have to give him your franchise. Like, you have to give him a percentage of your franchise to have him on your team. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And so it's one of those things where I'm very intrigued and I'm excited to see. I really do feel like, and this is just me. This is gut. This is not info. I feel like in the next week and a half, this is all going to get resolved. Like with all of these players, with Bryce, with Manny, with JT, all these guys are going to end up wherever they are in the next few weeks. And thus the rest of the dominoes will fall. Like, you know, the AJ Pollocks and Craig Kimbrels and all of these other guys that have yet to be signed. I think it all sort of falls.
It's so weird.
It's very strange. But the last thing that we're going to cover real quick, and this is just a quick sort of either hot take or cold take or whatever type of take. Kyler Murray was supposed to play baseball. Starting to look like he's not going to play baseball. Maybe he is going to play baseball. Maybe he's going to do both. For those of you who don't know, if you're not informed in other sports, Kyler Murray, the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback from Oklahoma, was drafted, I believe, 9th overall by the Oakland A's last year.
I think that's right.
He had a $6 million signing bonus. He got $2 million up front, but has to recoup it if he decides not to play baseball. I believe those are the terms of the contract. And mind you, he won a Heisman Trophy as a quarterback, so he's considering going into the NFL draft. And Dutch, I'm just wondering, sort of, do you think that's the right move?
Health-wise, no. But... Yeah. Financially, probably. I think people have like a myth on the football to baseball financial benefits.
Right.
Because if he goes first round, he's probably going to make more than $6 million in his career.
Yes.
Which is what his signing bonus is in baseball, I believe.
Yeah.
It was $6 million, right?
Yeah, it was a little over six.
Yeah. Okay. So if he decides to go the baseball route, he will get the $6 million signing bonus. Mm-hmm. And if he is even good at baseball, he doesn't reach free agency until 2026.
Hey. Yeah, you're right.
2026 is when he'll get his next payday. His big payday, yeah. Mm-hmm. He will be 32 years old, or 31, I believe, at that time. He plays football. He'll get whatever the rookie scale is for quarterbacks now. I think it's what, like $20 million over your contract?
Yeah, it depends on where you're drafted. It depends on where you're drafted in the first round, but yes.
Yeah. Okay, assume he's going top 15. Sure. So let's say he gets at least $10 million guaranteed, $15 million guaranteed. That's already more than his signing bonus.
Right.
And then he'll probably be a free agent in 2021.
Right. Well, and the reality is too, like what you're bringing up there is he'll make more off the bat. And if he's bad at playing quarterback, he can always go play baseball.
Yeah.
If he's just not a good quarterback, he can always go back and play baseball, where I'm not sure that that would be the case otherwise. The only guy that has done that, that went and played baseball first and then went back and played football, was Brandon Weeden. And ended up being a first-round pick.
Yeah.
Did not work out very well for his career. Yeah. Now, I guess he was kind of a journeyman. Being a backup quarterback sometimes better than being an actual quarterback because you don't get hit. But you're not wrong. Like, financially, it's also, I think, one thing that I don't know if this is hot takey or not. It's a lot easier to be a middle-of-the-road quarterback than it is to be good at baseball, right? And so the way that we look like to be a good baseball player, right? It's a lot easier to just be a mediocre quarterback than it is to be a good baseball player. I don't think that's really hot takey. It's just a reasonable thing to say. And so it takes being, I think what people don't really understand is like, yes, there's guaranteed money in baseball, but you're not going to get those hundreds of million dollars that we talk about with baseball guaranteed unless you're really, really good. And I know he was a top 10 pick, but it's there. How many top 10 picks, how many number one overall picks flame out, never get that big contract? Like, it happens constantly. So to be as good as you have to be at baseball, which is such a difficult sport, all Kyler Murray's going to have to do if he's a top 15 pick in the first round is be like, okay, and he'll get some sort of extension. Blake Bortles, Blake Bortles, who I love with all of my heart, but is a terrible quarterback, got an extension based off of his play over his rookie contract. Like, if he's just that good, he'll get some sort of extension. I think that would be way easier of a path for Kyler Murray in a league that doesn't really allow you to hit the quarterback the same way that it used to. We're not talking about a guy that wants to play defense or wants to play running back as opposed to playing football. So the health parts of it, like, yeah, things happen. People blow out knees. There are head issues. There are concussions. Alex Smith's freak leg injury happens. But
it can happen.
This is a different conversation than it was 15 years ago when it comes to playing quarterback. It's relatively safe compared to what it used to be. And some of those freak injuries happen in baseball, too. Like, I kind of don't disagree with him for deciding football might be the right move. And we don't know for sure, but that's the report right now.
And I love how we just finished talking about how Bryce Harper and Manny Machado aren't getting signed in free agency.
Yep.
And yet we're talking about some Heisman football player should play baseball because in 10 years he might get another contract.
Right, that's the funny thing, and it's weird, and that's where I started in this conversation. I was with that mindset, though. I really did. I was like, it doesn't make any sense to go play football. You can get hurt. Obviously, the brain injury part of it is the thing that prevents you from wanting to play that sport. It's gladiators. It's modern day gladiators, and it's kind of disgusting that we even still play that sport, to be honest with you. But and that's a whole conversation. But I love it, right? I love that sport. So I'm not going to be out here, you know. It's hypocritical of me to say these things, but it's modern day gladiators, and so we're in this position where we're telling them to play something that's pretty dangerous. But at the same time, given the structure of the position, given the fact that now it will take a long time to get up to the big leagues and to really make a name for yourself in that, let alone, we also only talked about the actual money on the field. What about the endorsement deals? Like, they come in baseball. They really come if you're a quarterback.
Yeah.
With that smile, he's a Heisman Trophy winner. I mean, come on. It only makes sense. So that said, I want the Dolphins to draft him.
Oh, me too. And why would he want to go? This was another thing that I always thought from the beginning of this process with him, is why would he want to go from being a Heisman winner, going from playing in the Orange Bowl, playing, in Oklahoma, right, at all these big stadiums, to going and playing at Port St. Lucie,
Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah, like, he'll be lucky if he gets to play in Port St. Lucie.
Right.
That's a nice place in the minor leagues outside of Jupiter.
And ride the bus and
like 100-mile bus rides. Like, why is that attractive to someone when he has the chance to be a literal superstar on the field and off the field?
How sad is this coming from two guys that are baseball first? Like, we're sitting here on a baseball podcast telling a guy not to play baseball, which is silly. But it's just it's a very specific circumstance that I think allows, if he was not a quarterback, we might be having a different conversation, or we definitely would be having a different conversation. That said, one last thing I just want to add before we wrap up, this has nothing to do with our podcast, but it does have to do with one of my favorite athletes of all time. That's Dwayne Wade. If you guys have not seen, Miami Heat Beat put out a really amazing video trying to get hashtag Wade Weekend going. And getting Dwayne Wade to the All-Star game. It's important that today and tomorrow, so if you're listening to this on Friday, that means it's your last day to do this, where you can vote on NBA.com for the All-Star game. Your vote counts twice. I think all of us would love to see Dwayne Wade in the All-Star game. Yes, it makes the All-Star game seem like kind of a funny thing, but isn't that the whole point? And to see him and LeBron on the same court together would be pretty cool. I imagine LeBron would draft him. I don't know. I think it's important. We're working through it with five reasons. If you look at all the hashtags, one last chance, one last dance, one last weekend, it's all of it. But Alf did a pretty amazing job narrating that video. The Miami Heat Beat guys put that together really well. And you can find it on my Twitter, on Dutch's Twitter, on really anybody involved with the Five Reasons Sports Network. And I just wanted to put that out there, that would be important to check out. So Dutch, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
You hate fun if you don't vote for Wade.
Yeah, you hate fun if you don't vote for Wade. Also, justice better.
Hey, everybody. Seth Levitt and OJ McDuffie of The Fish Tank here, but we're not diving in with a great story right now. Instead, we want to tell you about an incredibly fun upcoming charity event benefiting the Jason Taylor Foundation.
That's right, Big Seth. Wiffle Blast. Man, I can't wait.
I know you're fired up, Juice. The third annual Wiffle Blast presented by Funky Buddha Brewery and Sports Chiropractic and Natural Health Solutions will take place on Saturday, January 19th at Pine Trails Park in Parkland.
Man, you guys do a great job with this event. I played last year with my son and a couple friends, and we really had a blast, from the competition to the home run derby to the kids zone. It was just a perfect day from start to finish. Do I still have time to get my team in?
Yeah, we got you, Juice. We still have room for a few more teams as well. And since the Five Reasons Sports Network is a media partner for the event, the foundation is offering $100 off the cost of a team if you use
the
code.
They have a team?
Yeah, they have a team. Ethan and those guys. I mean, there's some studs on that
roster. I can't
wait
to play them.
We'll put you guys in the same division.
All right, that's what's up.
So we're going to put Five Reasons and Juice in the same division, and if you sign up now, you can be in that division as well and get $100 off the cost of a team if you use the code 5 reasons. That's the number 5 reasons. And the best part of it all, OJ, is that your donation will help support children battling cancer as well as pediatric emergencies.
Yeah, you know, that's what matters most.
Absolutely it is. For more information, visit jasontaylorfoundation.org or call 954-424-0799. Ethan, get that arm warmed up.
Do you ever feel like you're always on? Your phone is blowing up with notifications, you have commitments to friends and family, and not to mention work. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. It's a crisp and refreshing beer that even tells you it's cold when the mountains on the bottles and cans turn blue. When I need to hit reset, I grab a Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to coorslight.com/bluewire. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.